First case on our calendar, 05-1689, State of Ohio, XRL David Gross versus the Industrial Commission of Ohio. Mr. We changed this. Mr. Plunkett?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the appellee David Gross would reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The appellee David Gross respectfully requests the court to reconsider its decision, as the effect of which is to deny compensation to a claimant whose disability is undisputably related to the allowed conditions in an industrial claim. The court is faced head-on with a case where the infraction that precipitated the discharge is clearly related to the industrial injury. And so a choice must be made. Is the integrity and fundamental nature of our workers' compensation system to be preserved? Or are we to have a system where fault is an issue and eligibility to temporary total is put back in the hands of an employer?
Does our jurisprudence contain any cases where individuals have been determined to have voluntarily abandoned employment by violating work rules intentionally?
No.
There's no case of any kind to that effect.
I believe that this is a case of first impression where we clearly know that the infraction and the misconduct directly and proximately caused a compensable workers' compensation claim.
What is an employer to do when an employee persistently fails to conform conduct and violates workplace rules intentionally and thereby becomes injured? What should an employer do when the employer knows that there's a continuing course of conduct designed to lead to injury?
Employer can do two things. They can terminate the employee, which happened in this case. The employee was terminated, and or develop a system so that the injury doesn't happen in the first place. But in our system, even if you have an employee who acts reckless, who acts willful, who's voluntary, who does something that they know they should not do, in our workers' compensation statute, a person is still entitled to a compensable claim, and they are still entitled to temporary total. Our system is unilateral.
Based on the fact that the system is established as a no-fault system, and that injuries that occur in the workplace are compensable according to the schedule.
Yes.
But counsel, isn't the intervening factor here is that that's a termination that's interjected into this process as opposed to an intentional act that, or willful act that caused injury, and the individual is still an employee?
Yes, I mean, in this case, there was a termination.
Right,
the termination
and the cases
occurred
that, you know, or the situation that you're discussing is an employee who is not terminated as a result of this willful conduct.
No, my situation is even somebody who was terminated. David Gross was terminated after he became injured.
But he wasn't terminated for his injury. He was terminated for the willful conduct in violation, repeated violation of instructions, the safety manual, admonitions from superiors, co-workers. I mean, this was pretty blatant disregard.
Actually, in the letter, KFC terminated because he engaged in conduct that caused an injury. That's what the termination letter said. And if the standard is that termination because of you violated a work procedure eliminates temporary total, we have a fault system. And not only that, we have a system where the employer sets the standard of care. The employer can have detailed manuals outlining all sorts of unsafe conduct. And now we have a system where hearing officers must determine whether or not this employee violated the employer standard of care, and there's nothing to prevent that from happening.
Don't we resolve this issue? Because I think the problem is our opinion in the original opinion left the impression in some people's minds, those who think the sky is falling, that we've changed the rule, which we haven't, isn't the problem that it looked as if, in that opinion, it appeared as if Mr. Gross was being terminated because he was injured. Don't we simply need to write the rule that says you don't get terminated because you're injured, you are terminated? Here, the time sequence was so close together that that's what confounds this case, I think. But there's no question that we've held many times that an employer can dismiss an employee for the employee's conduct where there may be no injury, certainly. If we disconnect the injury from the termination, you don't have an objection to that, do you? If we make it clear that that's the test?
The test, Your Honor, I think that any time termination is tied to the eligibility for temporary total in a case like this.
Well, he got temporary total until the Industrial Commission said no, did he not?
He got temporary total, but
so the employer's letter didn't cause him to not get temporary total at the administrative level. He got temporary total.
For a while.
Yeah, for a
while.
And
then it was stopped.
Right.
I mean, the letter of termination prevented him from getting temporary total.
Is that the point at which it was stopped? Was the letter the cause for him to for the temporary total to be stopped?
Yes. I mean, the termination resulted in Louisiana Pacific being applied formulaically in this case. He was terminated. He violated their work rule, which said that if you do something unsafe and it causes injury, you're going to be terminated, and that alone stopped temporary total in Louisiana Pacific was applied.
Let me see if I can separate out the two issues. I don't believe you have any argument against the employer terminating him.
I have no argument against that.
So the employer could have said, you know, you violated the work rule, you were warned, et cetera, you met the standard that we can fire you, we fire you.
Absolutely.
And he can't come back and work there unless they decide they want to rehire him.
Correct, and he also does not have an action under 412390.
Right. But your argument is that action of termination also resulted in the temporary total being terminated, and now you have an employee injured who cannot find new work yet because he's still disabled.
Yes.
But has no worker comp coverage. That's the part of it that you really have the difficulty with, if I'm correct.
Yes, workers' temporary total is being denied to somebody who undisputably has disability related to the allowed conditions in their workers' compensation claim.
And if the opinion was to say that he was permitted to retain his temporary total, which resulted from the injury, no matter how it occurred, if he could keep his temporary total until he's fully able to work again, then he may not be able to go back to Kentucky to work. He may have to go somewhere else because he's been fired. Those are really two different issues, are they not?
They are two different issues, and that's the danger when you have a termination tied so closely to the eligibility for temporary total. When you have this situation where the misconduct is causally related to the disability, that's where problems result.
Now, in some of our cases, we've had an employee who was eligible to go back to work, or maybe not necessarily eligible, but refused to show up for an appointment or refused to get the doctor's reports, and those were determined to be an independent cause for termination and temporary total termination as well.
Correct.
Workplace termination resulting in temporary, because that was not related to the injury, but it was related to subsequent behavior that cut off their rights to the workers' comp.
In that situation, there is very little risk of turning the system into a false system or giving an employer complete dominance in the eligibility for temporary total. And our proposed rule is that whenever there is a nexus or a connection between the misconduct and the disability in a compensable workers' compensation claim, Louisiana Pacific should not be applied.
So it's that simple. We that statement would cure the problem as you see it.
Absolutely, yes.
At what point, if termination is a permissible result, which I think you concede?
I concede that, Your Honor.
At what point should the employer terminate?
I think the employer can terminate at any time, immediately.
Well, in this instance, the employer did terminate, except the termination affected the temporary total.
Correct.
So what was it that the employer did that was so violative of the law? You say they can terminate at any time. They did.
And it's not what the employer didn't violate the law. The problem is that the way the cases read, once the employer does that, does the termination, the Industrial Commission looks at Louisiana Pacific and says, there's a work rule which you violated, and therefore we are going to stop your temporary total. I have no problem with an employer terminating Mr. Gross. Acceptable, perhaps the right thing to do when somebody engages in unsafe conduct, but to tie that so closely to the eligibility for temporary total has drastic consequences to claimants who suffer serious lost time claims.
Do you want us to uncouple the idea of voluntary abandonment from this type of situation where there's a violation of work rule?
That, yes, where there is no doubt that the violation of the work rule directly and proximately caused the injury. Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plunkett. Ms. Porter, you wish to take your time now, okay?
Oops.
I think we had a discrete time split here, so you have
right, yes,
a little
thank
less
you.
Than five
thank
minutes.
You, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. The Industrial Commission believes that the court should reconsider this case for two reasons.
Let me just cut sure. through this. You agree pretty much with what we just heard from Mr. Plunkett, do you
not? Pretty much. I think what
separate the injury and the he doesn't care. Doesn't have any objection to the employer when the employer separates the employee who's engaged in conduct for which should be separated, but that shouldn't affect temporary total disability.
It shouldn't affect it in the circumstance where the injury is so closely tied to the rule infraction. I think what the commission really wants, though, in my first reason for why the court should reconsider, is that the jurisprudence for voluntary abandonment has become a little bit confusing to the commission. They need some guidance and clear rules on how to apply Louisiana Pacific in a situation not only like the situation here where the rule infraction causes the injury, but also in the Pretty Products and Luther situation where the injury may be causing the rule infraction. It's not clear from these three cases whether Louisiana Pacific even should be applied in a case like this first, and then some exception to Louisiana Pacific, or whether you leap over Louisiana Pacific and have some other rule. And it's also, the commission would also appreciate, I think, some clear guidance. In other words, not just an outcome for this case, but some kind of a rule in which they can follow for in future cases when they have fact situations that may not be identical to this one or identical to Pretty Products and Luther, that they can apply when they've made their findings of fact.
Ms. What Porter, rule are you?
Give me an example, if you will, of what you're talking about.
Well, for instance, the Luther Pretty Products fact situation is one in which the employee cannot follow a work rule because they are still injured. In other words, I can't come back to work, even though the rule says I have to come back, I can't come back because I don't feel that I am physically able to do the job. In this case, it's kind of the converse. He can't come to work because he broke the work rule, which is what caused his injury. And in both of those cases, Pretty Products kind of said that if the injury and the breaking of the work rule, the infraction, are connected, that Louisiana Pacific may not apply, but it really didn't set forth a clear rule as to then what do we do? Do we apply Louisiana Pacific and then apply an exception to it? Or do we just not apply Louisiana Pacific and say if there's any kind of a factual nexus between the two, we just say we're going to go ahead and give TT and the voluntary abandonment exception just doesn't apply. And again, voluntary abandonment is an exception. It's an exception to the rule under which normally an injured worker gets TT.
What rule is your office proposing for us, Ms. Porter?
Oh, sorry.
It's hard to find us all.
I think the rule that we're proposing, Your Honor, is that probably it would be easier to go through the Louisiana Pacific analysis in any case in which it's alleged that there is a voluntary abandonment. But then to look at the specific facts of that case to see whether the Louisiana Pacific analysis is or the result of the Louisiana Pacific analysis is inappropriate because the injury is so closely tied to the infraction of the work rule.
Can you envision a case where violation of a workplace rule would justify termination of temporary total? I mean, sure. Is there such a case? Can you tell us?
There are many cases in the jurisprudence of this court. For instance, there was a case in which someone lied on his job application. He got injured, went on TT. They found out upon investigation he had lied on his job application. He was terminated, and TT was terminated. There are many other cases where people don't return to work, but it's not caused by the injury. They just don't feel like coming back to work. They're warned several times, if you don't come back by such and such a date, you'll be terminated.
How close does Mr. Gross's case come to a voluntary termination, a violation voluntarily of a workplace infraction to terminating temporary total, in your view?
In my view, I think technically, if you technically go through the Louisiana Pacific analysis, then Mr. Gross should have his TT terminated.
Ms. Porter, you keep saying if you go through the analysis, why don't you do that specifically
okay.
in this case
okay.
so we know what you're talking about?
In this case, the Louisiana Pacific analysis, as you know, has three steps. There was a written work rule that clearly defined the prohibited contact. And in this case, there was a written work rule in the employee handbook that said never put water in the chicken fryer. It was previously identified as a dischargeable offense, again, in the handbook. It was identified as a dischargeable offense, and his supervisor warned him several times, don't do this, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And then third, known or should have been known to the employee, it was clearly known to him. He was warned repeatedly, not only by two different supervisors, but by coworkers, that he shouldn't put water in the chicken fryer. And then when he did, he was warned, don't lift the lid, it's too dangerous. And he did it anyway. So if you technically go through Louisiana Pacific, I don't think there's any question in the fact situation we see here that it would be considered a voluntary abandonment. The problem is that when you have a nexus, such a close nexus between the injury and the infraction of the work rule, it's amenable to abuse, as was argued previously by the employer.
And when you talk about nexus, and I've heard the term nexus or causation,
right.
Are we talking about the work rule violation causing the injury, or are we talking about the work rule violation coming right before the injury? I mean, is it only a timing, or is it approximate causation?
I think it's approximate, at least in the gross fact situation here, as opposed to the Pretty Products Luther fact situation. In the fact situation here, I think it would have to be causal. In other words, you could break a work rule, you could embezzle funds and walk out the door and throw out your back 2 minutes later. There's no causal nexus there, even though there might be a temporal nexus. It should be a causal nexus. And I think similarly in the Pretty Products Luther situation, that the injury has to be causing the rule infraction. It can't just be a timing thing. It has to be a causal nexus. I see that my time is up. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Porter. Mr. Corker.
Mr. Plunkett, would you agree with the last statement that Ms. Porter?
Forgive me.
Mr. Corker.
Forgive me. I'm Mr. Corker.
I'm
we
sorry,
reversed
Mr.
the order
Corker.
From our sheet. That's
excuse me.
That's
but
all
would,
right.
Would you agree with the last statement that was just made regarding the uncoupling of the idea of voluntary abandonment if we are talking about the proximate cause of the work violation to the injury?
I would not agree with the notion that there is any logical, legal, or rational basis to make an exception to the Louisiana Pacific Doctrine in those cases where the violation of the written work rule coincidentally also causes the employee's injury.
But that turns it into a fault system. And that's the legitimate objection of all who have criticized our previous opinion in this case.
It is true that a number of people, the trial lawyers and their constituents, have criticized the court's...
Well, their constituents are the injured workers of this state.
That's correct. Have criticized the decision on the notion that it injected fault into the workers' comp system for the first time.
Louisiana Pacific was an injured worker whose doctor said, you're released to return to your job on December 17th. And the injured worker didn't show up. And they had a rule that if you miss work for 3 days, you're fired. And that's what they did.
Correct.
That's remarkably different from this case.
I see the cases as very similar, Your Honor, and if I may explain the similarities. In Louisiana Pacific, the employee made a choice. They made the choice, fully aware of what the work rule was, that they were not going to comply with that work rule. That amounts to a choice placing yourself at risk of losing your job. And the Supreme Court has made clear that where you make a choice of that nature, you have effectively abandoned your continued interest in your employment.
Okay, but there doesn't seem to be any dispute here about your client firing Mr. Gross.
No, I think the facts that led to the firing were well stated in the opinion of the court.
There's no objection to that.
There's no objection to the fact that they have the right to terminate.
The application of Louisiana Pacific terminating his disability payments. That's the objection.
That's correct.
Counsel, we have a lot of cases that come before us involving employees removing guards or sticking their hand into a press or a cutting machine despite a clear work rule that says you should shut the press down. You should not take the guard off. We have a lot of cases that come to us where they don't. The employee violates the work rule, sticks their hand, and loses their hand, loses whatever. Under the way the case is now written, those persons, if they're terminated, would then not be able to get their employment temporary total disability, would they?
It would be relevant to their application for temporary total disability compensation under Louisiana Pacific. It would also be relevant if they filed for a safety violation against the employer, which would prompt an additional award of compensation because employees who unilaterally avoid safety guards are not entitled to what are called.
And I don't have any problem with that because those have a different standard.
So the relevance of the employee's conduct has limited relevance to only certain portions of their right to participate in the workers' compensation system.
And under your view of how Gross is currently written and applies to your company, every employer who has a similar work rule violation that can rightfully terminate, and nobody disputes a right to terminate that employee, also can now prevent their receiving temporary total disability because of a voluntary abandonment.
That has been the law of Ohio since 1995 when this court announced its Louisiana Pacific decision.
I don't believe we've ever applied it I don't think we've ever applied it to the injury being the cause, the workplace violation being the cause of the injury. It's always been a subsequent event. This is the first time that I'm aware of in my research that it's been directly related to the injury itself.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Corker, then, if I understand you, it's the temporary total disability benefit, which is the purpose is to replace lost wages. Your reading is that it only affects that particular benefit, but not the rest of the potential workers' comp benefits.
Your Honor, I think the court made that very clear in its opinion by initially stating we have a very limited issue before us. It goes only to whether or not the Industrial Commission abused its discretion in determining there was no causal connection between the loss of earnings and the employee's medical disability, and there was no abuse of discretion under what everybody has recognized to be the very egregious circumstances of Mr. Gross's conduct in this case.
So in this case, he could have applied for other types of workers' comp benefits?
Absolutely.
Let me ask you, if he had been permanently disabled by the Fryer injury, permanently disabled, and you terminate him, which nobody seems to disagree with your right to do so, would that also have given you the right to seek the termination of his permanent disability?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. In Brown versus Industrial Commission, which goes back, I believe, to 1993, this court held that a person who has already been declared permanently and totally disabled, which means they are incapable of engaging in any sustained remunerative employment, is incapable of abandoning employment they're incapable of performing.
So if he is totally and permanently disabled, he could get, in your opinion, workers' comp, but if he's seriously disabled for a period of 5 years, sir, he could not?
He could not be eligible for temporary total disability compensation. Wage loss compensation may be available to him under the particular circumstances of his or her case. All of these are very fact-specific cases. The court has acknowledged that each one must be examined on its individual merits. I think the crux of the question here is, how does the fact that there was a coincidental injury that resulted from Mr. Gross's conduct, how does that change the character of the decision he made to willfully abandon his employment? It doesn't change it from a knowing, understanding, willful decision to place himself at risk of being terminated. Unlike the situation, Your Honor, I'm going back to you, Justice Stratton, because you've asked a question relevant to this. Unlike the situation where a person is already disabled and retires because of their disability, that's an injury-induced retirement, which makes it involuntary, which makes it irrelevant to their entitlement to either temporary total or permanent total or arguably even wage loss compensation. However, at the time Mr. Gross made his decisions, he was not disabled. At the time he chose to add the water, to not remove the water, to close the lid, to open the lid, fully aware of the seriousness of his conduct.
In other words, he was at fault for his injury.
Your Honor, I take issue with the characterization of it as at fault.
Why?
I don't know why he made those decisions. There are repeated examples, though, of decisions claimants make that impact their entitlement to temporary total disability compensation.
So we're just to focus on the immediate activities that constituted the voluntary abandonment, and whatever happened subsequent to that is really not something that we need to consider once you determine, for temporary compensation, once you determine that under the criteria of Louisiana Pacific, that there was a voluntary abandonment, the consequences of that, whether there's an injury or that is the proximate result, is irrelevant to our analysis.
That's correct, Your Honor. I have yet to hear an argument how, again, the coincidental fact that he was also injured changes.
Well, I think the concern here, as was voiced by the opposition, is that now employers are going to put written workplace violation language into a manual. They are going to label that as a dischargeable offense, and they're going to put all of their employees on notice as to this, and thereby, whenever an employee does something even, I guess minor is a good word, as an infraction in the workplace, all of these things are going to be labeled as dischargeable events, and if they are injured as a result, they're going to not then have the temporary compensation. That's the problem, that the extrapolation of our ruling as characterized by the opposition. What do you say to that?
Louisiana Pacific was decided in 1995. It's been 12 years. Employers have had plenty of time to respond to the basic principles of Louisiana Pacific, and not one case suggestive of the concerns that you've just expressed has come before this court, even though everyone has an automatic appeal as of right to this court. There are many counter incentives that employers are aware of. For example, workers' compensation is expensive. It's especially expensive if you have to obtain your coverage for the state insurance fund because of how the Bureau of Workers' Compensation charges employers in their reserving system. Employers more and more are not terminating employees for a very good reason, because the single best way to minimize the impact of workplace injuries is to provide light duty. You provide light duty, there is no temporary total disability because they're working and drawing a paycheck. There's no charge against your risk experience, which generates the premiums employers pay. It's also the most humane thing to do, because employers have discovered over the years that workers' compensation claims become particularly litigious where the bond between the employer and the employee is broken. Keeping them on the job in a day-to-day basis tends to minimize the severity of the injury because the employee stays in their normal routine.
So are you saying that this particular facts here in Gross and the situation that has materialized as a result of the infraction is, number one, not too fact specific and not prevalent enough for us to even be concerned with modifying Louisiana Pacific and doing what the, counsel for the commission has suggested, and removing any injury that is the proximate cause of the infraction, or approximately caused by the infraction, removing that from the excluded compensation characterization?
That's correct, Your Honor. Neither the facts of this case nor any evidence before this court would indicate that there are concerns about rampant abuse, which I think we would have seen evidence of over the last 12 years, is in fact something this court needs to, in effect, modify the existing law of this state, which goes all the way back to Jones and Laughlin and Ashcraft, the basic logic and principles of those cases going back to 1987.
Counsel, isn't the difference that you now have the pronouncement of this court in this case? If you just had Louisiana Pacific laying there, being applied in the fashion that it had been applied, but now you have your fact pattern, and that's the concern. That's the concern that it is a green light for employers who want to skate off of, or to see that the employee collects nothing, to find that there was violation of a safety rule that led to the injury, and to fire the person. And almost every employer has safety rules or instructions, even those who are small employers and might not have manuals, give specific instruction to employees about this is a dangerous activity, or don't do this, or don't do that. Events happen literally by the thousands every day in this state where people are injured, and part of what led to the injury is the employee didn't follow the set protocol for the activity they were engaging in and got harmed by it.
May I respond
sure.
to that question as my time expires?
Yes, yes.
You may respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, safeguards are in place to prevent employers from abusing the Louisiana Pacific Doctrine. These work rules must clearly state what the prohibited conduct is.
Well, but what I'm suggesting is we now have the gross doctrine, and that's different.
I was trying to respond to your concerns about the employer response.
Okay.
What should the employer response to the gross doctrine be? Is that the more narrow question?
Yes.
Which is, if an employee violates very clear work rules under facts where not, he can't possibly argue, I forgot. The work rule was squarely in front of him, both in writing and verbally, at the time he was engaging in this conduct. So we don't have a situation where there was an inadvertent violation of a work rule, which would be a situation that might justify an exception to Louisiana Pacific Doctrine, because then the employee has acted out of inadvertence, not out of a conscious decision to abandon their employment. In that situation, I can see the court making an exception, because the basic concept of an abandonment of the employment cannot be satisfied. But here, the facts are so egregious, they are so narrow, as the court properly characterized in its opinion, they are so unique that I cannot see this case having any adverse consequences on the balance that must be struck. This is a critical balance here, between what the court characterized as the most fundamental tenet of workers' compensation, which is that the benefits must be causally related to the allowed conditions in the claim, versus interjecting for the first time notions of fault into the system, which I do not believe this decision does.
Mr. Corker, let me just stop you for a second there. The crux of this case comes from the termination letter that your client sent to Mr. Gross.
Correct.
As reiterated by Mr. Plunkett, it said that your client terminated him for engaging in conduct that caused his injury. And assuming that for the moment, that is the reason for the termination, and it is a fault system. So what do we do with the law? What rule of law do you think comes then if it's now in a situation or a posture where fault is into the system?
If you equate employee decisions with fault, all right, and I will accept that equation for purposes of this answer, then we have examined employee fault in a number of limited circumstances for a long time as a matter of law in this state. For example, if an employee is medically disabled and receiving temporary total disability compensation, and the employer makes a job offer of modified duty to accommodate their restrictions, and the employee decides not to accept that position, as a matter of law, they forfeit their continued right to temporary total disability compensation because they made a decision that they really weren't that interested in a paycheck. That's the law of Ohio. We have other situations, as I mentioned earlier, if the employee decides to unilaterally avoid a guard, a situation where the injury is likely to happen, they have violated a safety rule, they have avoided a safety mechanism, their claim is still compensable, but they may not be entitled to a safety violation because it was their own conduct that resulted in their injury, not the employer's failure to properly guard a particular piece of machinery. We look at situations all the time about the employee's conduct that has limited application to limited issues in their right to participate.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corker. Mr. Plunkett, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
In a seriously injured claimant, taking away temporary total disability compensation leaves the claimant with an empty remedy. Wage loss is not payable. permanent partial disability award, we don't know if it's payable until 26 weeks after the injury. Permanent total is not payable. So what you've done is you've created a system where somebody violates a work rule, they're seriously injured, and they get nothing, even though the claim is compensable and even though the disability is clearly and unequivocally related to the allowed conditions in industrial injury claim. There is no support in the legislation for that result. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.